Climate change is a global issue and all of us will feel the effects. However, the world's wealthiest countries have the resources to better prepare, minimizing the impacts on their citizens, while those in developing nations who contributed the least to climate change cannot easily learn about the problem or about possible solutions. Pablo Suarez is a scientist at the Red Cross Red Crescent Climate Center and a gaming enthusiast who's brought together his two passions in an effort to prepare developing nations for the impacts of climate change. He's in Woods Hole to give a talk linking research and the Red Cross. And joins us in studio this morning. Good morning.
Good morning. Delightful to be here.
Great to have you here. And we're gonna play a game a little bit. But first, we're gonna talk a little bit about your work. The Red Cross Red Crescent Center provides disaster relief and has created this climate center to better understand and address the humanitarian consequences of climate change and extreme weather events. So one of your responsibilities at the center is to develop and implement climate risk reduction for the most vulnerable people. Who are the most vulnerable people?
Well, think of anyone whose lives and well-being depends on nature, not just in terms of farmers and fishermen who subsist because of the food they harvest or they fish, but also people who are at risk from too much rain, too little rain, forest fires, extreme weather events of all sorts, shantytown dwellers. A lot of Africa is urbanizing very rapidly, and people who have to migrate from rural areas because they cannot harvest because the rains are so bad, they have to go try to look for a job in the capital city. They settle in a place that is empty. Tends to be the floodplain, the steep and unstable slopes and places like that. So suffering happens to those who have the least, who don't have the resources to prepare for what's coming.
And we forget, but some of these people don't even have access to weather forecasts to alert them. So they may not even know that this weather's on its way.
Well, if you think of what happened in the south of this country with Hurricane Katrina, it was very clear that a gigantic storm was heading towards the coast of the United States, and still 1,000-plus people died. A storm of equal magnitude heading towards coastal Mozambique, a country that has 18 languages, that is extremely poor. The village where I worked had a life expectancy of 39.
Wow.
So all of us in this room should be either dead or dying on average. There's no roads, no paved roads, no electricity. Radio is difficult to own if you're an extremely poor farmer who can only eat if the rains are good and you harvest. Mm. So how do you tell folks in those communities that a gigantic storm, an unprecedented storm, is coming? And how do you help them make a decision? Because if the storm is coming, what do you do about it?
Where are they going to go? What are they going to do?
Yeah. Exactly.
So, and in some of these places, these floods or droughts that they might experience, they believe are punishments from God or simply bad luck.
Well, it's those are two of the most plausible explanations if you didn't have exposure to science. They were the explanations that most of humanity had 200 years ago. Mm. Now we have a satellite image that shows where the hurricane is, where it will be in 6 hours, where it will be in 12 hours. And if one of these hurricanes were heading towards Cape Cod, this radio station will be prepared and helping others be prepared for it. Knowledge helps. Mm. We are fortunate in that because the Red Cross is an organization that is present globally. I have been working in over 60 countries talking to people at risk, talking to people who suffer. And they are the ones who are telling us all over the world, the shanty towns in Philippines, the farmers in Guatemala, the fishermen in Burkina Faso on the lake. Everyone is saying that things are changing, that the weather is not what it used to be, that the rains come at a different time of year, that there are things that happen that never happened before. I was in a village in Ethiopia that experienced very big hail storm. Mm-hmm. They didn't have a word for that thing in their own language. So we can tell people who are suffering, who think that it's divine punishment or that it's just extreme bad luck, that, you know, I can't refute that hypothesis as a scientist, but I can tell them that other people in very different parts of the world are basically experiencing the same unprecedented disasters, unseasonable weather, as we had in Boston last year with a snowstorm in October when the leaves had not fallen from trees and so branches were cracking.
Right.
We're seeing the same all over the place. And people understand when you say someone like you in a different country suffered the same. Here's a video. Here's a game that can help you understand it. When people understand, people do more.
All right. So you're a research scientist by profession, but you're also a gaming enthusiast. So what made you decide to try participatory games as a way to educate people about climate change?
Well, two parallel forces have been driving me in that direction. On one hand, as a scientist talking to humanitarian workers who are extremely busy dealing with crisis after crisis, more intense, more frequent disasters. These folks are so busy that if someone tells them you have to come to a talk about climate change by a scientist, their default attitude is it's boring and it's irrelevant, so why should I? If I start doing my usual thing, which is talking science, of course they're going to be tuning off and thinking about when are they going to ship the humanitarian aid to that village that is hungry. So I needed to figure out a way to engage them, and games is proving extremely good. An additional reason is that my wife, Jeannot, and I are game enthusiasts. We have complementary strengths. I'm the math geek. I'm the guy who can capture a complex system in the real world and turn it into numbers that are related to each other. What you do, what are the consequences? Jeannot is very capable at figuring out the experience side of things. What if I act in vain? What if I fail to act? What are the emotional consequences, but also the institutional consequences? Mm. And in both her work and my work, we have to help people learn. We have to help people have a dialogue about collective consequences of individual decisions. So we started working together first, trying more innovative and participatory approaches, and then decidedly going into games that have made a very good difference in our work.
We're talking with Pablo Suarez, scientist at the Red Cross Red Crescent Climate Center and a gaming enthusiast. Our toll-free number, if you'd like to join our conversation, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@wgbh.org. All right, let's talk about a couple of your games. You've got one game that's called Spreading the Word, which you developed because people continue to suffer and die due to entirely predictable extreme weather events, events that have been forecast. And I guess this is a game that's similar to Telephone?
Right. It's a Telephone or Chinese Whispers, as other folks call it. It's a game where what I say to you, when you say to someone else, may get mildly distorted, and when someone else says it to the other person, may get even more distorted. In the game, it's entertaining. Mm-hmm. In real life, if you're talking about a forecast, any distortion to the forecast may lead to the wrong information, therefore the wrong decision. We have a workshop in Senegal that convened scientists who make predictions. It can be about coastal storms. It can be about El Nino and farming rainfall. It can be about climate change. It can be about fishing. It can be all sorts of things. These scientists know. They have technical knowledge and they speak in technical jargon, assuming that people know what they say. We also have Red Cross people from the regional, continental Africa, national, provincial, all the way to the village volunteer. And we also have farmers and fishermen. And it was a workshop about science, and the scientists, the people who make predictions, continued to act in a way that, well, you just learn what I mean. Right. So over dinner, we had a long table, roughly 30 people, and we had the scientists and the Red Cross sharing dinner. And we decided to adapt the game of Telephone with a competitive twist. So there was a Toblerone chocolate for the winning team. That would have been dessert. The deputy director of the meteorological service was invited to create the message. It had to be a forecast. What he chose was something like, there's an 80% chance of 240 millimeters falling in the north of Senegal within 24 hours. It's just complicated enough that you need to pay attention. We explained the rules very clearly. The deputy director is going to say the message to the first person at the head of the table on each of the two sides of the long table. You have to listen very attentively and communicate it to your neighbor only once. They cannot ask you what you just said, because in the real world, you don't have the time to.
Right.
And then second person communicates to the third one. Of course, expect distortion, so make sure that it works. And the first team to get the message to the last person of the row, the correct message, that team wins the Toblerone. Well, guess what happened? One of the teams got it totally wrong. The message was about pumpkins. Of course, that was not related. But more importantly, the other team distorted the message so that instead of 240 millimeters of rain, which is a catastrophic flood, it became 40 millimeters of rain, which is just a drizzle.
Yeah.
And they saw themselves that under the pressure that is inevitable when a disaster has happened, communication reveals its flaws if you didn't think about it.
So who got the chocolate?
Nobody. I did. Because the message was not communicated right.
There's another issue with forecasting weather events. Users often can't understand the meaning or the implications of the forecast, so they don't take action. And scientists can't understand why their forecasts are not used. So you developed a game to address this situation called Early Warning, Early Action.
Yes, this was a game, one of several that we have designed in collaboration with the Parsons School for Design in New York. They have awesome game designers. And they came with us to Senegal to see how we could do this, and to Namibia. The game is simple in its concept, and the concept is related to what hopefully we'll have the time to play in a few minutes. Where basically, there's a forecast in the form of a roulette, and the forecast may say 70% chance of a storm or 10% chance of a storm. And you have two choices. Either you do nothing and live a normal day, and if there's a disaster, then you have to deal with the consequences. You have to spend your resources in disaster response. That has a cost. Or you can act before the disaster, doing what we call disaster preparedness, which is, for example, pre-positioning relief items. Mm-hmm. In the game, there's a mechanic to reveal this, but that's much cheaper. To send a tent after the flood to the other side of the river when the roads are impassable and the bridge is broken, it's a very expensive proposition. You need a helicopter, you need boats, you need all sorts of things. If you do it before the flood, it's cheaper. So people, given a forecast that is never 100% certain, it's always going to be, there's a higher chance than usual of a disaster. What do you do? Do you act or not? What if you act in vain? What if you fail to act? And that's the conundrum. What we love about this game is that everyone is exposed to the same information, but different people make different decisions.
Right.
Some are more risk-taking, some are more risk-averse, some lose their money very fast because they're over-preparing. If you prepare all the time, you run out of
resources. Run out of money,
resources.
Right, yeah. So now you did a variation of this game at the White House last month using a Frisbee. So tell us about that. And President Obama was not there, unfortunately. You didn't get to play this game with him.
Correct. The president wasn't there, but Janet Napolitano from Homeland Security was the person welcoming us. And there were some senior people at the event, 130 people. What we did was everyone stood up, 130 people, and we told them that they were coastal villagers in a place where a hurricane may happen. Now, if a hurricane is going their way, they may want to evacuate. An evacuation, they reveal the decision to evacuate by sitting down. Now, when you evacuate, you don't do your normal life. You don't go to work. You don't go to school if you're a child. You don't listen to the radio if you're in the basement and you can't. You don't go to your job. So to sit down and evacuate has its cost. I have a Frisbee in my hand that I would throw at people at chest level.
We should say it's foam, so it didn't
hurt. It's a foam, yeah. The White House security made sure that it didn't have the capability to cause real damage. A hurricane for real can do real damage.
Right.
So throwing it at chest level meant that if you were standing, you were hit by the hurricane. If you were sitting, the hurricane didn't damage you. It went over your head. Where the Frisbee went was determined by a roll of the die. I rolled the die, I looked at it, I threw the Frisbee in the right direction. First time, people were not prepared, they didn't sit down in time, it hit first row in the chest. Then I explained what the forecast was, what this roll of the Frisbee. You know, a 2 means to the left, a 6 means to the right, and if I roll the number, I throw it in that direction. The second time, they anticipated it, but they didn't act fast enough. They were beginning to sit when the Frisbee hit their chest. The third roll, after having laughed and suffered at the same time, they were very prepared. Mm-hmm. And everyone was standing except for the narrow passage where the Frisbee, the hurricane, was likely to go. And when the time came to throw the Frisbee, it elegantly flew through the White House without hitting anybody, illustrating the concept of disaster preparedness based on science.
We are talking with Pablo Suarez. He is a scientist at the Red Cross, Red Crescent Climate Center, and a gaming enthusiast who's brought together his two passions to prepare developing nations for the impacts of climate change. Our toll-free number is 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@wgbh.org. All right, we're going to play a game here. And we've got our participants. Our game is Andrew, Amy, Jeannot, and I are going to be playing. And explain the game for us, Pablo.
Sure. So each one of these players represents the Red Cross team that deals with disaster management. Amy and Andrew are in neighboring provinces. So the regional climate is the same for both of them. The local climate may be different, but the regional climate is represented by a die
that is
in a cup. It's a green big die.
Yep.
So, Amy, please roll it.
Mindy. Amy's over there.
Sorry, Mindy. Okay. Thank you.
But you don't want to see it. We want it underneath the cup.
It's under the cup because we cannot see what's going on with our naked eye. The air looks the same. Can the other team please roll the original die as well? Okay, so there's a number under that cup. It's anywhere between 1 and 6. Bigger number means more moisture in the atmosphere, more energy, more threat. Each one of you also has a white die, right? So that represents your local conditions. Let's do this. First, reveal what's under the cup.
Oh, we're going to reveal.
So Mindy's team got a 2, not much. Jeanne and Amy's team got a 6. That means that there's a lot going on there. Now roll your little die, your local die. Well, as I can tell...
Well, I got a 2 and Andrew's got a 1. So with our 2, we're good. Not a big storm. Amy, what have you got on your side?
I have a 1. I've got a 3.
Okay.
So Jeanne got a 6 plus a 3 and 9. That's just less than a flood. If it had been 10 or more, the addition of the two numbers, it'll be a flood. Yeah. Let's do it again. One more practice round. And reveal what's under the cup.
4.
And both teams rolled a 4. Now roll your white die, your local. And again, nobody got flooded. This is natural because most of the time you don't get flooded. Now, if, again, any of you have received an addition of 10 or more, you would have a flood. And because you're Red Cross, you have to pay 4 beans.
We have beans. We have 5 beans. We each have 5 beans.
Exactly. Yeah. That's your budget. And you have several years that you have to deal with those. Now, in the Red Cross work, as mentioned, you can either do disaster response, which you do after the fact when there's certainty of the disaster. That costs 4 beans, a lot of your budget.
Yeah.
Or if you want, you can invest in preparedness, which you pay only 1 bean, but you have paid it. You have moved the tents. You have prepositioned stuff and so on.
And so if we had paid our bean in these first few rolls, we would have really wasted our bean because our storms were very small.
Right. So let's now give you a choice for real. Roll your die. Leave it under the cup.
Leave it under the cup. Okay.
And before we reveal what's the regional climate like, would you like to invest in preparedness or not? Pay 1 bean? Or take the risk and maybe pay 4.
I'm going to take the risk.
I'm going to pay a bean.
All right. And
I'm going to take the risk.
I'll pay a bean also.
Okay, I'm not paying a bean. I'm taking a risk.
So 2 players decided to invest in preparedness. The other 2 didn't. Okay, now reveal your die. And
3.
Looks like everyone is fine. They got low numbers. Roll your local.
Oh.
And
so I got an 8. So I got 6 and 2, 8.
What this means...
I got a 6, but I got a 2. So I'm okay.
Yeah.
What this means is that people who paid the bean for preparedness invested in vain. Our donors are not happy. Because if you move your tents, if you move your staff, if you alert the population, hey, watch out, there may be a storm, and nothing happens, you not only lose money, but you also lose trust.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Let's roll it again. And this is going to be entirely up to luck, like the real weather.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to invest in preparedness or not?
We don't get to see anything.
You...
No now, forecast.
Right. It would be awesome to see what's under the cup, right?
Yeah.
That's what science can do. So if science is accessible to you and you can understand what it says, you can make a more informed decision. Let's do this. Let's imagine you understand the science, reveal what's under the cup before you make a decision.
And all right. So when I have a 3, so I, knowing that my forecast is saying it's not going to be too bad, I'm not going to invest my bean.
Right. There's no need to invest if the threat is not too big.
Mm-hmm.
You can keep your beans, which in the Red Cross can help to change the tires of the vehicle, do some training of your staff, build a hurricane shelter, all sorts of good things. Now, if you had rolled a 6...
I would have given you the bean.
You would have given me the bean. Now, the good thing about this game is that when you see that there's a 6 in the regional rain, you're much more likely to get a disaster. If you roll a 4, a 5, or a 6, you get a disaster. But still, you may get a non-disaster.
Right.
The issue is that you understand how climate science works.
Yeah, it's great how these games can tell you that, though.
We see how people get it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that we like about the games is that, first of all, they create this moment of confusion. The H-U-H question mark. What is going on? What are we doing? And then as they begin to figure it out, they begin to understand the system and they have an incentive, because we don't have the time, but I had a prize here, a chocolate cookie from across the street.
Oh.
If you have an incentive to understand the system, you have an incentive to win. You try to figure out. And then eventually you go through the aha moment when you get it. Yeah. If I see that the threat is bigger than usual, maybe I should invest in preparedness. Otherwise, maybe I should invest in something else, because there is always something else to do.
So these games are not, though, just for those vulnerable to effects of climate change, but humanitarian development workers, government officials, donors who are trying to assist those at risk, right? So are there times these games maybe don't work as well?
Well, the most important thing is to tailor the game design and facilitation to whoever your target audience is, who you're playing with. So if you play with government officials who are... we play the session with ministers in a Caribbean country. You cannot make it too goofy, and you cannot make it so that pre-existing tensions between ministers are allowed to flourish and people grab themselves by the neck. The game is an amplifier of who we are. And there's a famous game theorist who says that just like cars amplify our legs and roofs and homes amplify our skin, games amplify our imagination. So you have to create a game that is suitable for people who you're playing with. And we have found that we can create a game for who it's worth it. If you allow me to share this, we received a research grant from the Climate and Development Knowledge Network. This is a combination of UK and the Netherlands support. And we are now testing, developing and testing games. And we are finding that some things can go wrong, of course. For example, there's a physical game, Humans versus Mosquitoes. It's a lot of fun, and one day I hope people can play it. There's a website for it. It was played in a physical version, and a player popped his ankle because he was playing so passionately that he got, you know, he twisted his ankle. Things can go wrong, and they can go wrong emotionally, especially when there's power relationships, gender, and so on.
Right. And imagine you have to take into account cultural differences, and, you know, like I think I was reading in some of your stuff that you wouldn't want to do a gambling game in when you're talking with Muslims. And,
exactly.
Yeah, so you have to think about who your audience is, what you're saying.
And usually the best approach is to engage the target audience in the process of game design itself. So before you scale up going to every village, or going, like right now, Jan and I are going to Tanzania to play with municipal level government officials. We're going to go with a prototype early November, and we're going to play with government officials who are the people who should play the game. And they're going to tell us, you know, this symbol, for example, there's a game where we propose to express, I am protected, by crossing your arms over your chest. To us, that means I'm protected. Guess what? In Uganda, that is what people, the gesture people use to refer to death.
Oh, boy.
That's how people are in the coffin. So if you want to say, protect yourself by doing the gesture of death, that doesn't work.
Doesn't
you need
work,
to
yeah.
change the gesture.
So what have you learned yourself from playing these games? And how has it changed how Red Crescent does its work?
There are two important insights. The first one is that our work is more effective when we use games as part of everything we do. They cannot be a standalone thing. There needs to be dialogue. There needs to be reading. There needs to be rigor of a different kind. But people engage. People have serious fun. So as a result of gameplay, people want to figure out what it is that they don't know. People want to converse. If you have an opinion and your teammate has a different opinion, you have to talk about what your team should do. Learning and dialogue is accelerated through games. The other thing is that it just inspires people to do more. I am working harder. I am loving even more what I do. And we are engaging more people. We have recruited over the years over 100 students, university students, to help us better communicate, better make plans for what we know. And games are a spectacular laboratory where you can inhabit the complexity of future risks and test decisions. What if I evacuate when there is a threat of hurricane category one in the Cape? Well, maybe I evacuate in van. Is it worth it or not? It depends. Should I evacuate everyone or only the people who can't move? You know, you can test those scenarios with games.
Right. So I noticed you have this chocolate cookie in the bag, like you had the chocolate dessert for the... Does it take more than a couple of minutes for one of us to win that cookie? What did you have in mind?
All right, let's play two more rounds of this game. But now I'll surprise you. Okay. Give me that green die.
Yeah.
Give me your cup.
Yep.
Okay.
Janelle's laughing because she knows what's going on here.
Right, right.
So the rest of us do not.
What we have done now, I have substituted your die, which you knew what it was, right, by a new object, which is under the cup. That new object represents climate change.
Okay.
Climate change basically means that today is different from the past. And you don't know what's under there. So let's imagine you don't have the forecast. Are you going to invest in preparedness or not?
You know, I'm thinking I probably will because weird weather's been happening and I want to be ready. So here's my bean.
So Mindy, pay for one. Anyone else?
Andrew?
Five,
Andrew's.
Four, three, two, one, stop. Three
Janelle
players
didn't pay. She knows something we don't know. Yeah.
So now reveal what's under the cup.
Okay, it's another kind of die. Ooh, with a number four on it.
I have a number two.
All right, it's another kind of die. It's an eight-sided die. Mm. So the range is now from 1 to 8.
Ah.
Now what you guys see is a normal value. Looks like a 2, looks like a 4. It could have been normal climate. Mm-hmm. That's what's happening today. Right. We see normal climate most of the time, and the deniers say, who talks about climate change? Nothing's really different. Mm-hmm. But guess what? Some stuff is awaiting you. Roll your individual die.
We got to do this quick, yeah.
Quick, okay. Yeah.
I got a 9.
I got a 3.
So no one got flooded again.
No, but I was close.
But
I was worth my bean.
Mindy. Right. And this is an important lesson. We played 3 turns and no one got flooded.
Yeah.
People may get into the habit, floods don't happen.
Right.
Right. So that, and then next time it comes, you're in trouble.
Yeah, so Janelle gets the cookie.
Exactly. Not surprisingly, the person with the most beans is my wife. Congratulations.
You have to share that cookie with her. So folks want to know more about this. You've got a talk coming up this afternoon. The HUI International Committee's got you here for the Climate Risk Management Linking Research with the Red Cross. That's this afternoon at 3 o'clock at Redfield Auditorium here in Woods Hole. Pablo Suarez, thanks so much. This is very interesting and fascinating. Like you say, who doesn't like to play games, right? And it's doing a lot to teach us a lot about climate change. Thanks for being here and sharing your work with us.
Delightful to be here.
And thanks, Andrew and Amy, for playing. I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point airs weekdays at 9:30 a.m. and 7:30 p.m. We're also on Facebook at The Point, WCAI. The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Dan Treidel and Jenny Junker. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR station, a service of WGBH.